Right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Can I just check with the operator that the people on the phone lines are now connected into the call? I'll just wait for confirmation before we start. Okay. Right, good morning, everyone. For the benefit of those joining by the phone, the meeting is now about to begin. For those in the room, on the top desk and on the floor, if I could just make a request for housekeeping purposes, please turn off BlackBerries and mobile phones because it will interfere with the broadcast. Just very briefly to set out the format, what to expect coming up. There's going to be presentations and those are likely to take up to an hour. There's going to be plenty of time after that for questions, which we'll then take, and that's going to be both from those in the room here and also by phone, and we'll cover that when we get to the Q&A section. For those who are dialing in, there are copies of the presentation on the website if you haven't already found those. Okay, without any further ado, I'll hand you over to Xavier. Thank you.
Good morning to you all, and welcome to the London Stock Exchange. Looks like we have almost a full house. It's been about 120 days now since the new management has come in. I know it's tradition after 100 days to announce what one is about to do, but this coinciding most likely with most of your holiday summer vacations, we thought it might not be proper to summon you for such a meeting and decided to wait a little bit until we could all come back nicely refreshed after a nice summer holiday and hear what we have to say. And I'm afraid we have quite a bit to say this morning. So we're looking forward also to a productive Q&A sessions. But first of all, of course, thank you for being here. First of all, because before I go into my introductory remarks, I would like to introduce our executive team. As you know, we streamlined our management team back in late May. Analyzing our business, we saw three core revenue areas or buckets. Our capital markets businesses, this is where we carry out all our transactions, our conduit businesses, and this is led by Raffaele Righieri-Zarmi. Our information and data services, where basically we harvest all the revenue stemming from the sale of data, information services, and also where we run the most important aspect of our operations, which is technology, led by David Lester. We group together all our counterparty risk, clearing and post and settlement businesses in a new post-trade division, led by Massimo Capuano. And the full division, our support division, and many of you already know him quite well, continues to be led by our CFO, Doug Webb. Doug, you all know very well. In terms of background of the executive team, Doug is a graduate from Cambridge University, where he read geography. A seasoned finance professional, he has held many senior positions, including most recently with Logica and Kinetic. I mentioned Raffaele Righieri-Zarmi a bit earlier, who has been working all of his career in financial services, starting as a trader, like I did. Prior to joining Borsa in 1998, he held senior trading positions in the fixed income department of Credit Suisse West Boston. Massimo Capuano, a graduate from Rome University, in electrical engineers, there's definitely a domination of engineers on this executive team. Massimo has really, and many of you know him, has built Borsa Italiana into what it is today, fixing the post-trade area, expanding into derivative, fixed income, and many other areas. Prior to joining Borsa, Massimo was a senior partner at McKinsey & Company. And last, but of course not least, David Lester, an electronic engineering graduate from Queens with over 20 years' experience in financial and information technology, including companies like Thomson Reuters, as well as a few other consulting companies, and of course now the London Stock Exchange. So what we propose today is I will start, first of all, with a candid assessment of our findings and some of the early actions that we've taken, as well as the opportunities that we see going forward. Doug will then give you an update in terms of our financial position and trading conditions. Raffaele, we all call him Raffi, you can do so as well, will discuss the ongoing diversification of our capital markets product portfolio. This is really critical. We will discuss today, of course, what's going on in the cash market. We'll try to project a new look of cash markets, certainly as we see them, but also what we're doing about derivatives, what we're doing about commodities, what we're doing about fixed income. And there's a lot to do there. Massimo will give you some insights afterwards into ways that we are currently looking to leverage our remarkably efficient and low-cost and client-centric post-trade assets. That's namely CC&G and Monte Titoli. And again, last but not least, David will talk to us, and I know there will be a lot of questions there, about what we're doing to transform our IT platform, as well as what we see as very substantial opportunities in a business area that is almost today represents 30% of our revenue, which is information services and data sales. But first, let me tell you in a few words, if I may just paint a wider picture of what I found coming in here about 120 days ago and what seems to be the key concerns that we've picked up from most of you in the financial services community, analyst community, but also outside, also in the press. Clearly, the macro overview of the markets where we operate in is we're in a very, very difficult situation economically. A lot of stress in the financial economy, and many commentators have obviously seen that volumes were depressed and that competition was on the rise. And that, I think, has been the key part of why our share price has acted the way it has in the last sort of 12 months. And I would like here to say, make a few comments. First about the macro environment, but then about where we are positioned before Raffi gives you more detail. It's clear that the current crisis we're in at the moment is a debt-induced one. We've fed basically a debt-fueled binge. And it's equally clear to us that the solution has got to come from equity issuance, and the modernization, optimization of the functioning and liquidity in our equity markets. And in that perspective, we believe we are remarkably well positioned. There are technical issues also pertaining to equity markets in Europe. And I want to talk about this a minute, because this really sets the stage for our future growth strategy. We're viewed as essentially a cash platform with high concentration in UK and also, of course, Italian equities. In aggregate, equity-related revenue, cash equity-related revenue, represents as much as 41% of our total revenue. That includes, of course, data sales. If you look at actually UK cash equities, on the trading side today, that's about 17% of our revenues. But if you look at the macro picture, there's quite an interesting story. Let's take a look at Europe for a moment. 31% of world GDP, community of in excess of 400 million people. Daily volumes in equity markets, $25 to $30 billion in a good day. The United States, 300 million people, 27% of world GDP, $300 billion of daily volume. There's a 1-for-10 ratio between equity volumes or equity trading volumes in Europe and the U.S. That points towards significant potential for future growth. The second point is when you look a bit more into a bit more granular details at the European picture, and when you analyze turnover velocity, the ratio of capitalization to actual traded volume on an annual or whatever the basis you want to look at it, you then realize that the UK is actually the worst market by far in Europe. Yesterday, for example, £2.6 billion of UK equities traded in our markets. In Italy, €4 billion. Italian equities today are a more active market than the UK. Why? Because their turnover velocity approaches 200%, whereas turnover velocity in the UK is at 80%, the lowest in the industrial world. To give you a comparison, the United States is around 500%. So there are issues about volume in Europe that are clearly linked to the fragmentation of European markets, the difficulty and cost of trading cross-border, but also frictional costs. And we all know the keen relationship between pricing and volume. And the point we're trying to make here, and certainly that is obvious to us, is there is very substantial potential for volume growth, not only in Europe as a whole, in the area of cash equities, but specifically in the UK. And the key to unleashing that growth is three things, like in any mature businesses, lowering frictional costs, and that can only come from the reduction of our own cost base, modernization of the underpinnings in terms of technology, lowering latencies, increasing throughput, so that you make it easier and much cheaper for clients to trade a lot more than they have in the past. And finally, and where we think the key is to revenue growth in the area, is scale up. Any of the businesses that have gone through these crises linked to the maturation of their business model, whether you look at automobiles, steel, telecom, the winners, look at the ArcelorMittals of the world, the winners have always been the ones who lowered their costs, innovated. For us, innovation, clearly, the path to innovation goes through a substantially enhanced technological tool. But then the third key component is scale. If you lower your costs, innovate in terms of your technological capabilities, and add scale, particularly in an environment where economic progress is around the corner, perhaps a recovery within a year or two, and when substantial upside for volume growth exists, this can be a classic Warren Buffett business. Boring, few competitors, many of them have already exited, and frankly, high margin business. Cash businesses remain today high margin business. So the key to us is not only restoring our competitive position, and I think there are early signs post the changes we made to our fee schedule, and we'll discuss this in greater detail a bit later on, that we are stabilizing our market share. But through the lowering of frictional costs, doing what we can do in trading, and we'll see also in clearing and post-trade, helping grow the total pie. The fourth component, of course, is linked to regulation. I will not give you a lengthy discussion there, or lengthy discourse, but there is clearly a tsunami of regulatory change coming through. Regulators are focusing on the opacity of markets, and not just in equities, also in fixed income, the transparency of transactions, and the model of internalization today is, by a number of regulators, being put in question. And there is, for us, not just because we're on exchange, but because we are focusing on substantially improving our relationship with our lead clients, the big wholesale banks, a competitive opportunity to create something new. So what I found when I looked at the London Stock Exchange a few weeks into taking the new position with my colleagues is a combination of strength, but also challenges. Start with the strength, so we can focus on the challenges later on. Brand clearly internationally renowned. We sometimes forget to mention it, but the London Stock Exchange remains today the number one primary capital raising platform in the world. In terms of numbers, in terms of numbers of issuers or total amounts raised, whether you look at secondary capital, rights issues, whether you look at primary capital, whether you look at market share in the emerging world or in the mature world, the London Stock Exchange in the last 12 months raised more primary equity capital than our four nearest competitors put together, namely Deutsche Börse, NASDAQ, Tokyo Stock Exchange, and the New York Stock Exchange. Cash equities, clearly, despite the fall and pressure that our market share suffered from in the last few months, we remain Europe's leading franchise. And I will remind everyone here, and we'll take questions on that later on, our market share has obviously fallen in the UK, but has recently recovered and stabilized in the mid-60s. In Italy, it remains north of 90%. I think it was 92% yesterday. One significant asset that we have, and the credit for which goes wholly to my predecessor, is the Borsa Italiana transaction, which gave the new London Stock Exchange Group a significant opportunity via the acquisition of post-trade, clearing and settlement, fixed income, commodity trading, derivatives, and many others, by the acquisition of these assets, substantial optionality to diversify our portfolio. You've heard the pitch for potential volume growth in the cash business, but that doesn't mean that we are ignoring the potential for growing and diversifying our portfolio of businesses. This is a phenomenal opportunity. In Italy, if you look at these businesses individually, IDEM, for example, in derivatives, IDEX in the commodity area, Monte Titoli in the CSD world, CCNG, all these operators are acknowledged as very competent from a technology perspective, very low cost, enjoy great client relationships, and have been consistently rated, including by regulators at the European level, at some of the lowest cost providers in their particular field. That is a key advantage that we intend to leverage to a pan-European scale. That transaction is now being fully integrated. Part of the reason and why we did streamline the management team in May of this year is the integration having been finished. It was obvious that the time to rationalize and streamline the management structure had arrived. I would like to leave you with one final thought in terms of our strength, which may not directly translate into higher revenues, but the core reason why exchange exists in the first place, and which I think is coming to the fore in this troubled time where regulators are asking them questions and participants are asking themselves questions about what is the optimum nature and shape of financial infrastructure and financial markets. Exchanges are neutral venues. And this has obvious implications for us. The reason why we changed our fee schedule on September 1st is because we wanted to make it neutral. In an environment where regulators are questioning the opacity of markets, where there is clearly a need to bring together intermediaries, retail, and the interest, and let's not forget them, corporate issuers, exchanges incarnate neutrality. We can bring together a number of wholesale participants, investment banks, for example. Some of them had become disillusioned, created their own venues. And we see in those, in the way that some of these venues evolve, difficulties in preserving a corporate governance where everybody or every single one of the shareholders remained aligned. What exchanges can do in that space is bring a neutral platform that satisfies the regulator in terms of quality of data, quality of process, quality of regulation, but at the same time integrates the concerns of clients. This is very important because regulatory changes are coming. Regulators are looking for a solution, and we think we've got it. And I would say that in the coming weeks and months, we hope to be able to announce new initiatives that will crystallize that point in greater detail. So those were the strengths. But, of course, you want to know what we're thinking in terms of our challenges. There was clearly an issue related to our client relationships, and that has been an immediate area of focus for the executive team and I. We've gone to see our clients, clearly in London, in Italy and elsewhere around Europe and elsewhere around the world. We've listened to them, and we've told them that we were part of the solution, not of the problem. The days of exchanges operating in a monopolistic environment were gone. We actually do welcome competition. Competition helps us keep our pencil sharp. It helps us focus on our costs, on the quality of our product offering, and our technology. But beyond that, we believe that exchanges can work in partnership with the large wholesale and retail intermediaries. There's the issue about cost base, which I think particularly in the back of the Millennium acquisition has received some comments. Millennium, and David will discuss this in greater length in a minute, has been a great transaction for us. transforming from a technology perspective the ability to insource a software factory. But frankly speaking, we published a £10 million savings of an £18 million acquisition. That's pretty good. There's a lot more we can do in the area of cost reduction. However, we will not announce anything unless we fully modeled it and unless we committed to it. So the only thing around cost that I would say beyond what we've announced is watch this space. There will be more in the future. But we will not discuss any further numbers today besides what we've already announced. The final point, of course, is scale and diversification. Focus on cash, particularly UK competitive pressures. What are we going to do to diversify that portfolio? And as I said earlier, our own thinking is about restoring our competitiveness in cash markets, scaling that platform up. These are good businesses, and they will become good again, particularly with that volume growth potential. But when you have quality operators, quality assets, like IDEM, like IDEX, like CCNG, like Monte Titoli, it'd be a crime not to scale them up at the time where the trend is towards Europeanization or pan-Europeanization of infrastructure and post-trade. And we have some exciting, and we'll have exciting developments to announce in that area over the coming months and years. This will be a great area of focus for us. So what did we set about doing? First of all, clearly, getting in shape. This is what our shareholders wanted to do. This is what you wanted us to do. This is what we want to do. New management team. I talked earlier about streamlining, meeting every day, brainstorming, looking at all the strategic options, but also focusing on execution, cost reductions, engaging with clients. All of us go and see clients. There is no assignment, individual assignment to a marketing team or our key clients. Clearly, there are people within the group that follow clients' concerns and provide the necessary support. But the entire executive team and the chairman and the board members who seek to engage with us are available and spend a lot of time with clients to get that feedback, be it strategic or tactical opportunities. This is very important for us, and we actively engage. We've announced, we've made some announcement around cost reduction. You've seen that. It's in the numbers. We've changed our fee schedule. I commented earlier briefly as to why. This is very important because we want all to feel welcome, and we're already starting to see some evidence as we have not only eliminated the passive or make-or-take-or tariff, but lowered the discount thresholds. We're already starting to see some evidence that some of the very large users, the big wholesale banks, that had frankly become a little bit disaffected by the fact that our old tariff resulted in a higher per-trade basis point charge for them than some smaller users, are today coming back because they are reaching those top levels of discounts. And that has obviously been a factor contributing to the recent slow, but we believe this is a turning point, increase in our market share. There's a lot more to do there, and particularly we need to address the issues around the very high cost of clearing UK equities, which is today, frankly speaking, out of our control. If you use the LSE to trade UK shares, if you clear through LCH, net through Euroclear sets, you're paying three times the cost of trading the same equities via KIX using EMCF, for example, and three and a half times the cost of trading via Turquoise and Euro CCP with their new tariffs. I'm not going to take you through the granular analysis as to why that is. Clearly, we are not shareholders who do not control either LCH or Euroclear. But the very, very high cost of post-trade processing by these two entities is today the number one impediment and obstacle to our building back up market share. And it's certainly been a substantial factor in us losing some of that market share. And in that space, we are also thinking of ways to mitigate that handicap and restore our competitive position. Technology review, of course, we've announced David will give more detail. I would just say that there are very, very few exchanges in the world, certainly to my knowledge, that in a period of 3.5 to less than 4 months have reviewed in excess of 18 worldwide technology solutions, carried out due diligence, run the numbers, run proof of concept on commoditized hardware in basically third-party installations, or such as sort of Intel or IBM, sort of out of our own, I would say, control, to test the quality and test the framework and the performance of in excess of 18 systems around the world. In 3.5 months, you'll find very few organizations that can turn around an analysis with the numbers to back it up in that sort of deadline. And this will be, although small, I am convinced, and so are my colleagues on the executive committee, a turnaround transaction for us. Finally, launching new products. There'll be a lot more in the coming few months. Baikal is now midway through its launch. We are in active negotiations with a number of equity partners, banks namely. We have also announced, for example, a new UK retail corporate bond or retail-enabled bond initiatives. There will be many others, and there's a lot of potential there for us to grow our product portfolio. What I would say in terms of the way forward, both the getting in shape and leveraging the Borsa Italiana portfolio, is we are an ambitious exchange. We are an ambitious executive team. We intend to become a top-tier exchange. And, of course, do acknowledge that, as always, it's all about execution. So there's much to prove. We are on the way. We have delivered a few small, one of them potentially transforming initiatives. There will be a lot more in the space in the coming months and years. But this implies, going forward, three core principles. Clients are at the center of everything we do. They will remain so. We will play offense, not defense. And beyond getting in shape and leveraging the assets that we have today to diversify our portfolio, we will also review organic as well as inorganic opportunities for us to grow our business and increase shareholder value. And this may involve partnerships, joint ventures, but also M&A. And by the way, also I know this is a little bit of fixation in the press world, this does not involve necessarily other exchanges. 30% of our business is not related specifically to exchanges. It's an information and data services business. When you look at that environment, it's a huge universe. So these introductory thoughts, I will come back to you after the presentations, my colleague. I would like to leave the floor now to Doug, who will talk about what you really want to hear about, which is, of course, the numbers.
Thank you, Xavier. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, as Xavier said, I'm going to take the next few minutes to cover the key points from the pre-close trading statement that we issued this morning. As normal, this provides an update on the key performance indicators for the 5 months to the end of August. And in addition, we provided some further detail on the recent cost savings initiatives that we have undertaken. I think the overall message in the announcement this morning is essentially one of trends that we reported in our most recent market announcements in May and July, continuing for the past 2 months. Now let me look at each of the segments in a little more detail to sort of amplify that. Within capital markets, the primary markets area, we've seen continued strength in secondary fundraising, I think reinforcing Xavier's comments about the importance of equity markets in helping to solve the problems of the debt-induced crisis. The strong need for rights issues and other secondary fundraising has mitigated the very quiet IPO market that we've experienced, resulting in total funds raised on our markets in the 5 months, in quantum terms, being in line with what we raised in the previous year, or in which companies raised in the previous year. In equity trading, we continue to see the average value traded in the UK well down on last year's very strong comparators, reflecting the overall market falls in both volumes and values, together with the impact of competition on market share. Of course, we've got another month or so of particularly strong comparators to go. In Italy, the stronger retail element to the market has helped a recovery in volume. And there we're actually seeing volumes up 4% on the prior year for the 5 months. In other product areas, the wholesale bond volumes in MTS have remained weak during this period. But the price changes implemented earlier this year have driven strong volume growth in the derivatives market, particularly in IDEM in Italy. Turning to post-trade, volume growth in both the clearing and settlement areas has been driven by the growth in the underlying equity and derivatives trading in Italy, benefiting from the price cuts in both the trading and post-trade areas. This also has led to cash held for default and margin purposes remaining above trend level, despite the lower overall market risk that exists compared with last year. And finally, looking at information and technology, the late cycle nature of the real-time data element of the business has, as expected, resulted in a further fall in terminal numbers in the period in both the UK and Italy. However, the other information businesses continue to perform well. And by example, we've seen a 16% growth in terminal numbers in ProQuote and 28% in Market Connect, our own information distribution businesses. We now turn to costs, where, as Xavier said, we've been increasing our focus in recent months on lowering our cost base, a process that's very much ongoing. We have three major initiatives that will affect our first half numbers and provide increasing benefits to the group going forward. Firstly, as we announced last year, the Borsa integration will provide a further £13 million of incremental cost savings in the current year, with only a small exceptional cost remaining to be taken to deliver these savings. Secondly, and as we announced in July, we've undertaken a series of staff reductions across our business. These are expected to result in the loss of some 133 positions by the end of the current calendar year, a reduction of around 12% in our headcount. Annual savings from this initiative will be close to £11 million per annum, starting from the second half of this financial year. We will take an exceptional charge of £14 million in our first half results for the cost of this programme. Finally, of course, we announced the Millennium IT acquisition last week, which, as Xavier has said, for a cost of £18 million, along with delivering a state-of-the-art trading system, result in annual cost savings of at least £10 million per annum for our financial year 2011-2012. As we reported, this will result in £25 million of accelerated depreciation and write-offs in the current year, of which I expect at least £18 million to be booked in the first half. Xavier has also said we continue to place a great deal of focus on reducing the cost base, and in particular on developing further opportunities to gain benefit from our new in-house lower-cost software capabilities in Sri Lanka, and David will say a little more on that in a few moments. Finally, of course, we will continue to see an adverse impact on our reported costs from the weakening of sterling against the euro over the past year. At the time we prepared this slide, providing a sensitivity based on an average rate of 1.15 seemed pretty sensible, although clearly if the trends we've seen in the most recent days continue, the impact will be higher. A 1 euro cent movement in the average rate for the year impacts our reported by cost by a little over £1 million per annum, just to give you a sense. So that's all I want to say on current trading and costs. Let me hand over to Rafi, who will give you some more background on our capital markets business.
First of all, good morning to everybody. I know some of you, but I'm very happy to be here today, to be able to present to yourself a bit what we are doing in the capital market area. As Xavier said, the merger with Borsa Italiana has given us a great opportunity to leverage an already well-diversified portfolio of products, starting not from scratch, but as you can see in the slide, in many cases, we are starting from a leading position in the European landscape. And just to mention our leading position in the listing, as a listing venue, and for us, listing venue, especially for the international listing, is not just a pure listing venue. It's a great platform for us to develop other products. Just to name one, the Russian derivatives market that we have created a couple of years ago, or maybe a little bit more, and that last year has given us a great increase in volume with a rate that was probably in the region of 200% of growth. And I think that, you know, going forward, if we are going to be able to attract other international listing, this will help us to develop other products that we hope can be as successful as this one. What is important is to underline the fact that the team that has accomplished all these results, as you can see, we are the leading platform in MTS, in the fixed income wholesale market. We are the largest fixed income electronic retail market in Europe with MOT. We are the number one in ETF, and we are going to talk about that later on, but ETF to me is one of the most attractive places to be at this time in the financial space. And we are the second largest market in Europe also for securitized derivatives. IDEM, that is our equity derivatives market, is the third market in Europe by turnover. So we are not starting from scratch. I mean, we have, you know, not only a diversified portfolio of products, but products that are already, you know, leader in some respect in Europe. This team, the team, as I was saying, that has accomplished all this, is there, is here. I mean, is working together. It has been working together for years. It's going to work together, we hope, for a long time in the future. It's a team that is very used to competition, very accustomed to competition, because, you know, the competition today, we feel that competition is only on the cash market. But, you know, in the recent years, you have to think, for example, that in the derivative market, the concentration rule has never existed. So there, in the derivative space, competition is there since ever. And we are used to that. I mean, for the IDEM, just for to give you an example, we have Eurex, we have Life that launch, you know, product on the Italian underlying starting in 2001. So it's a long story of competition behind us. Nonetheless, we have been able to counter very effectively this competition to maintain, you know, I would say 90% of our market share on the derivative market, as well as Xavier was mentioning before, in the cash market in Italian stocks as well. Where do we see the potential to grow in the future, though? Because this is what matters for us now. I mean, this is the past. Those are, you know, good results, a solid base to start with. But now we have to leverage the London position and, in some respect, to take advantage of this fantastic place of London to be able to leverage all our products and to internationalize further all these products and open probably to a number of other places to become a more global marketplace. So where do you see this potential to grow? Certainly derivatives for us is going to be a focus, a key for the future development. We foresee the continuation of what I consider to be a secular trend in the growth that exists in the listed derivative market space. You know, the derivative is a huge and wide space where, you know, there is a huge market in over-the-counter derivatives. But if you just take a look of what has happened in the last 10, 15 years in the listed derivative space, you can see that the rate of growth of this market has been extraordinary.
And I think that this is going to continue. Also, in some respect, for some of the reasons that Xavier was mentioning about the regulatory pressure that will probably push more and more towards transparency. And, you know, listed derivatives are very, very transparent. Just to give you some number on the EDA we have experienced in the last 8 years, a 35% compounded average growth rate that I consider to be quite extraordinary, but, you know, considering that the market has not developed so much. I mean, we have probably the same number of companies listed in the Italian market than we have 10 years ago. And so, you know, with a sort of constant market cap, if you wish, I mean, we have been able to see this huge increase. And why? Because obviously there are more and more users. And those users are institutional players. Those users are corporate players. Those users are sometimes individuals. And there are more and more individuals that used to trade derivatives in the world. In this space, obviously, as you know, we have signed this partnership with TMX. And this partnership will provide us a complementary client base, for sure, what we consider a state-of-the-art derivative platform. It opens the door for us to the North American market, that is a quite attractive market, as we want to increase our scale, and there are a lot of clients that are very active in the space. It's going to help us also to develop the range of products, because obviously we want to broaden the range of products that we can offer in this on this platform, on our derivative platform going forward. And to develop new products is possible. There is space, especially in equity derivatives, in commodities, but we needed to have a partner that could help us to become more global. And so, you know, TMX was considered, from our side, the best choice at this time. And so this will start as soon as we are going to have the platform ready to operate. It's going to be probably by the end of this year. And so this will give us the opportunity next year to start with our innovation process. As Xavier was mentioning, what is very important in derivatives as well as in the cash space is the use and the capability to use the pricing as a marketing tool. And also in EDEM, we have effectively made, and we do that from time to time, I would say every year, we have introduced a new pricing scheme to attract more over-the-counter flows. And we have been very successful because we have been able to increase by 80% the volume on single stock future this year, thanks to this price adjustment. And all this business flow to our clearing house, where there was no change in pricing. So at the benefit of the revenues of the overall group. And I think that this is important because this also gives you the sense that, you know, to control the value chain is extremely important for an exchange. And some of the inefficiency that Xavier was mentioning in the cash space, obviously, are not there in the derivative space, thanks God. And so this gives us probably more ability to control and to manage more effectively also our future growth. And I would like also to spend a few minutes to mention the electricity derivative market that is a newly born segment of the EDEM that we have launched in November last year. And so far as been able to trade already 13 million megawatt, and I think that this is an achievement because in general what we have noticed in other European markets that started earlier than us, you know, the first 2-3 years the volumes were very, very low. We think that this market, the size of this market, can probably grow in 3 year times by 30 to 40 times. So it could be a substantial business for us, also in terms of revenues. In this space, in the derivative space, our intention is going to focus on equity derivatives and commodities, and obviously
electricity and energy derivatives in general. We are not going to, we have no plan and we are not considering to enter the fixed income space. We want to be focused, we want to remain concentrated, we want to do what we know, how, what we know to do, and you know that I think is what we need to do at this time. Fixed income is going to play a very important role for us, and here we have one of the most well-known platform, let's say, in the space, that is MTS, is a wholesale government bond, and not only government bond, but also corporate bond, cover bond, and a number of different other bonds, platform that is established now since more than 10 years. I think that we can see a great future in this market going forward. We have recently hired Jack Jeffries. We have appointed, it was appointed by the board as a CEO of the company a couple of days ago. Jack Jeffries has an extensive experience in the financial marketplace here in London. Most of his career, he spent most of his career here in London, but also some in Australia. And I think that, you know, with his help, we are going to continue what we already are doing, that is to align more and more our interest with our clients. Also in MTS, with the past management, we had some controversial situation with our customers, with our clients. This has, let's say, for sure not helped MTS in the last year of crisis, and we think that now that we are realigning our interests with our clients, we are talking with them, we are trying to create and respond to their needs in the proper manner, we already are seeing very significant improvement in the volumes, especially in the last few weeks, and we are recording now a cash activity that is not far from the top level that MTS has recorded 3, 4, 5 years ago. And so this is very encouraging for us going forward. I will spend a few words on MOT, our fixed income retail market. We are considering to, we are planning to export this model also in UK. We think that there is a huge potential for this market here as well. We think that this market has been very successful over the year in Italy. It's a very good model. It will provide also to the UK broker community, especially to the third, second and third tier the broker community in UK, the possibility to offer, you know, a new variety of products to their customer. And, you know, they are all very keen, they are all very supportive, we have talked with them, they are pushing us to speed up the launch of this platform because they feel that this could be really a big success, and we are very keen to support them as well. This is going to happen also, we hope, by the end of this year. ETF, as I said, is a great place to be. I just give you some numbers are reported here. Year to date, the average daily trading volume in the U.S. is $57-58 billion. In Europe, is $2.2 billion. If you want to maybe double this volume, because in Europe there is no obligation to report the over-the-counter trading activity, so we know that more or less 50% is done over-the-counter, 50% on the order book in Europe. So it means that maybe in Europe we can get to 4 billion. So is you know, the space is probably 10, 12 times more in U.S., and we are the leading exchange in Europe, both for trading volume, number of contract traded, and for turnover. So we think that we are very well positioned to take advantage of what we expect to be quite substantial growth in the future in Europe as well. Baikal, already, Xavier talked already about that. We are discussing with banks. We needs to make sure that the model that we have in mind would fit with their needs. Regulations could play some role as well in the evolution. But I think that there as well we are going to have some responses quite soon. And last but not least, I'm going to talk about this competition in UK equity cash that I know, you know, is what is the most popular topic at the moment in the press, in the media, everywhere. And everybody talk about high frequency trading. Everybody talk about latency. I mean, you know, these kind of words that you have been in the space for years and years in the trading, like myself or like Xavier. We never heard about this strange word, latency and so on and so forth. Now, you know, it seems that all depends by that. The reality is that the high frequency trading and the high frequency trader are a very diversified category. There are, you know, many different strategies within the space. They exist since very long time. It's not something that, you know, started yesterday. You know, we had high frequency trading type of strategy that probably started 10 years ago, what was called stat arb and statistical arbitrage and, you know, a number of others. In the recent past, what happened was that some of these high frequency traders develop strategy that were aiming to take advantage by technological differences. So it's more a game of arbitrage technology than a pure trading strategy. And all of a sudden, you know, all the exchange, all the trading platform are, you know, running to try to lower as much as they could their latency. What I can tell you is that latency is for sure important because, you know, nowadays, obviously, there is a lot of sensitivity also by our clients, all our clients, also the traditional institutional broker about that. But at the end of the day, as we, Xavier said, I mean, you know, if you look at the picture, it's very simple. I mean, in UK, we have a turnover velocity that is very low, a market share that is going down, let's say. But on the other side, we have the Italian market where, you know, the market share is steady above 90%. Yesterday was even higher than 95%. But, you know, let's say it's on average higher than 90%. Turnover velocity is very stable around 200% or very close to it. The platform is the same. I mean, you know, the two markets are on the same platform. So probably latency is not really the real problem. And we are convinced, and, you know, it's evident, that all the problem lies in the post-trading, where there is, in the UK space, a huge inefficiency that we don't control at the moment, but we hope we can mitigate, as Xavier said, in some way in the next future. So what is important is to try to identify, you know, the real problem rather than, you know, talking, you know, about high frequency trading, about all these things, latency and so on and so forth. Probably without, you know, having, you know, the time necessary to, you know, to make this deep analysis and see whether this is really the problem or maybe something else or, and so again, I mean, I think that, you know, high frequency trader will always play a very important role in the financial markets. Maybe those specific type of arbitrage, arbitrageur of technology, let's say, as I call them, maybe they are going to evolve as well. And I guess, but this is my pure guess, that, you know, once we're going to get to a level playing field in technology where all the technology more or less will be equal, let's say, those firms will probably disappear, as we have seen something similar happening in the past in many other occasions. I mean, you know, there are window opportunity that open at some point in the financial market, and, you know, after 2-3 years, they disappear. And this has been the story of the trading in the last 25 years. It's not going to be different this time, I guess. And one thing I will leave you with is you have probably notice that I never talk about one of the most abused terms that we keep hearing, you know, every time we talk in general and you see a presentation, that is strategy. And, you know, there are many definitions of strategy. But one that is one that I like the most is that strategy is what to do when there is nothing to do. And thanks God, this is not our case, so we have a lot of things to do, and so we don't need to talk about strategy. Thank you. I will leave the floor to Massimo.
Good morning, everyone. So Xavier and Rafi have been speaking about post-trading, and now there is post-trading. Post-trading as a problem sometimes, particularly for our market here in UK, but for LSE Group, a big, big opportunity for many reasons that I would like to speak now and to present you in a few minutes. First of all, just a few comments about the situation in the post-trading arena. For many years, people have spoken about post-trading as the plumbers of the market. So with as a no sexy business, nobody want definitely to work in the post-trading because it wasn't so fascinating as being a trader or even a risk manager and so on and so forth. Nowadays, for two forces at work, I do believe that the post-trading is now becoming a very important business, even in terms of potential to grow and being a very profitable business for the exchange industry. There are two main forces at work, as I said. First of all, for many years, everybody talk about vertical silos, horizontal model. Nowadays, this is something that has changed significantly. One of the reasons is because we have understood that there is no business model that could be successful per se, but there are business models that could be applied for the different asset class. So derivatives now is vertical by definition. All the derivatives exchange decided to be vertical because it's undoubtedly that you do need to be vertical and to control your clearing house if you wanted to compete in the derivatives marketplace. It's different from equity. Because equity, due to the interoperability, nowadays, if you wanted to compete, you should open up and leave the freedom of choice to your clients, because otherwise, being vertical in the equity could be a risk for your volume, for your contract. So you do need to change your vision of the post-trading depending on the different asset class. The second elements in the post-trading arena is a competition. For many years, the post-trading has been a specific monopoly in every single country. Now there is an increasing in competition in the post-trading, both for clearing house and the CSD. Competition means fees, pressure on fees, cost reduction. Being competitive means that we have to challenge many different competitors in many different countries for many different asset class. For third reason, we do believe that post-trading nowadays is a very big opportunity for the group. It's an opportunity that we want, of course, to pursue, being sure that our clients is always at the center, at the focus of our actions. We have set up five strategic goals. The first one, because there are two important assets in the group nowadays, the clearinghouse, CCG, and the CSD, Monte Titoli. CCG is particularly active in all the different asset class, equity, derivatives, fixed income, and commodities. We could exploit this capability of our clearinghouse and supporting what we are now seeing as the main impediment for the group and for the cash side, for the equity cash, to regain market share. So there is a significant opportunity using and exploiting our post-trading to support the our capital markets in all and the many different asset classes. So this is the first strategic goal for the post-trading. The second one, we said that there is an opportunity to improve significantly the efficiency of the post-trading in UK. The process, as a matter of fact, here in UK is quite complex. What is a real measure of the efficiency of the post-trading is at the level of the so-called STP, the trade-through process, the way in which the trade is treated after the trading with efficiency, so will be a specific way to say that a post-trading in a particular market is efficient or is not. Well, in UK, there are, I would say, significant potential to enhance this efficiency. The STP is quite efficient in Italy because we have built up an STP based on control on the whole value chain from trading to custody. This won't be the case in UK, but we could reduce the complexity of the post-trading in UK, and the efficiency that we have could increase in the post-trading will be for our customers a reduction in terms of cost. Again, a way to be close by to our customers. The way in which we can compete, of course, won't be only focused on our domestic market, Italy and the UK, but there are opportunity to internationalize our asset in the post-trading. As I said, nowadays there are a lot of opportunity for all the traders for trading at the pan-European level. Therefore, there is a need for having a post-trading entity to provide the pan-European services. We do believe that we are very well placed to do so. Fourth goal is to provide appropriate post-trade services for the OTC market. In this case, we wanted to be very selective. We wanted to compete to enter in the many different areas of the OTC, but being very focused and selective, starting, for instance, from the equity derivative side. Finally, as our fifth strategic goal, we want even to broaden the range of services that the post-trading entities are providing nowadays. There are some rooms to increase the efficiency and the productivity for our customers in their back offices. So you know that the back offices traditionally has been one of the areas where there has been labor-intensive inefficiency because they have to treat many different markets with many different tax regime, with many different way to treat the single securities. We do believe that in combination, even with some partners, we can provide services, new services in this area. Finally, I would say that this strategic goal should bring us to a significant increase in the revenue that today comes only from the Italian side of the group. We are absolutely in the position to double our revenue and therefore the contribution of the post-trading business line to the revenue of the group. We are absolutely on track on delivering these five goals. In some area, works are in progress. In some area, we have already delivered. I would say that in the context of the post-trading for the group, we have already reached some specific goal, and some others are coming up very soon. First of all, there are some strategic assets in the system that we wanted to exploit properly. One of that is Extreme. Extreme is the Monte Titoli, our CSD pre-settlement systems. The Extreme has been already used for the international order book in the UK platform. Therefore, there are still the Extreme as an element of the business system of LSE Group. It is for equity cash. We are now implementing Extreme for Baikal, and for the new market for UK retail bond, what we call now UK MOT, again, Extreme will be an important component of the system, of course, talking about the post-trading. Another significant achievement that we plan now to deliver in the short term is the Extreme as an interoperable system, because, as I said, the interoperability for equity cash nowadays is a must to compete. And in a context where we have many different clearing houses, if we don't provide just a routing system to provide exactly the effectiveness of the interoperability, in this case, the interoperability, instead of producing efficiency, the risk is to produce, on the contrary, complexity. So Extreme will be, in the UK context, the real answer to use a proper use of the interoperability. So in this case, the trades could be on the interest of our clients, could be brought in the different clearing house, again, for the interoperability matters. We have another important achievement that could be now reached because CC&G has recently had the accreditation of ROCH, the recognized organization clearing house by the FSA in London. Therefore, CCG is absolutely ready for providing services to the UK customers. We, as CCG, we are now fully concentrated in two main projects. The first one will be to provide the for EDX, the derivatives UK markets, to provide the clearing systems in cooperation with LCH, and this will be delivered at the end of this year. So it will be the first international project for CC&G. And the second one will be the services as a clearing house to Baikal. In the context of Baikal, you know that CASA has to deliver a pan-European services. And this is exactly what the CASA is now doing, providing services. We are setting up the internal system for CASA to provide clearing for 14 different countries, of course, including UK and Italy. And therefore, CASA will be one of the clearing houses for Baikal, ready to compete in an interoperable scenario. As I said, there are other opportunities for the clearinghouse, for instance, in the space of the OTC, for instance, in the space of new services, but is crucial for us because we are talking, in the case of the post-trading, we are talking of a business based on economy of scale. We do need to try to get and to attract as much volume as possible. So definitely for us is absolutely important, because we want to be an important player in this business, to grow. And grow for us means not only, as I said before, to try to serve our domestic and captive markets in Italy and UK, but we wanted to internationalize even more at pan-European level our customer base. And, of course, we are ready to grow organic and even inorganic, of course, in case of significant opportunity that we can see in the market. Thanks very much. And now I hand over to David.
Good morning, everyone. I have two charts. I thought I'd just take 10 minutes, 5 minutes to take you through the acquisition of Millennium IT, which we announced last week, and then 5 minutes to give you an overview of how I see information services and how we intend to take it forward. So starting with Millennium. First and foremost, this will give us a high-performance, scalable matching engine. So there are a number of reasons on the chart for the acquisition. And, of course, this was one of the key areas we looked at when we looked across the 18 different options that we had. But Millennium brings this and then so much more. Millennium will bring in-house software development for the first time within the group. Today we have 150. During the integration, we had about 200 software development resources. They were outside the group, outsourced from third-party suppliers here in the UK and also in Italy. Going forward, we intend to move a lot of that resource and a lot of those systems to Millennium IT's software division in Sri Lanka. Millennium is a lot cheaper, obviously, in Sri Lanka, and traditionally we haven't been able to put all the resource we would like into a research and development capability. And what's key in financial capital markets IT is that ability to do research and development and innovate to make sure that our systems remain ahead of everybody else's. And I would see one of the key advantages of this division and this transaction is bringing R&D inside the group and a very enthusiastic team in delivering and developing the IT and the systems. Thirdly, as you'll have heard from Rafi and Massimo, and you'll hear from me in a minute on information services, you have an ambitious team here for growth. And this growth will require that we're able to roll out multiple products and services for all of the divisions, which are mostly, if not entirely, underpinned by technology. So having the scale of operation, have the ability to roll out matching engines, and the ability to roll out other software services in parallel over the next 3-5 years through our growth plan, we see a key ability in Millennium's scale. And also, Millennium is not only a matching engine capability technology firm, they have surveillance, ticker plant, which is the information services dissemination engine, desktop, which is ProQuote and Market Connect, and other businesses I'll talk about in a minute, a highly capable smart order routing system, I would say almost one of the best in the world, the group that Millennium will bring to us, and they also have a lot of experience in post-trade technology, selling to a number of clients in post-trade around the world. So it is a much more diversified business than just a multi-asset class equities derivative fixed income matching engine. They have a lot of other technologies that underpin their group. Millennium has 451 employees, some 275 of which work in the software development division. And one thing that's particularly impressed our team is the knowledge they have both in products, and they've gleaned that from working with a number of exchange clients around the world in fixed income, in derivatives and equities. But they also have very highly capable technology software development teams too. So within that 275 people in the software group is a series of product experts that are as keen as anything to contribute to the growth of the business, as well as a core key software development test release capability. So as I say, 451 employees, 275 in software, over 90% of them have first class honours graduates from Sri Lanka and other local universities, and the top team all educated in US, UK and European top universities. So a really highly capable, innovative group that will now mesh with the team that I have here at the LSE who've been developing and delivering our systems to date. In terms of cost, the next two bullets, a significant ability to reduce our software development charges, and we've released to you some of the numbers that we see initially from that going forward, taking outsourced, rather expensive suppliers and bringing them inside the group, not only so we maintain and develop the intellectual know-how, but also bring the unit cost down per development team. Millennium also brings us an offshore footprint. It also brings us a presence in Asia, And the offshore footprint gives us that capability to think about where we provide certain operation services going forward. As the group grows, particularly in information services, a lot of our competitors like Thomson Reuters and Bloomberg and Market and other companies have capabilities offshore where they can process data, they can process operations, they can deliver systems. And we think this offshore footprint provides that transformational element to our company in terms of providing those kind of services offshore rather than here in the UK or initially where it's somewhat more expensive. Millennium has its presence in Asia, and Tony Weresinger, who's joined the top team, couldn't be here today, already has been able to provide us with intelligence for a lot of the exchanges, financial IT firms, and other groups within the Asian area, and also actually in the US and London where he's well connected. Finally, Millennium brings us a new revenue stream. The company is profitable. It is a good pipeline of existing customers and new customers. And Xavier and I have already spent some time on the phone with a number of the new customers and the existing customers talking about how we intend to run the group, fully independent, maintaining the innovative culture that it has, but also the resources that we would use and the resources that we want to use to develop the business for other clients and other exchanges. So we fully and absolutely want to embrace the software sales business to other exchanges and other kind of vendors and other interested parties in capital markets IT, starting with a profitable business with a number of really high quality clients. Underpinning the bottom of this slide, I just thought I'd mention the technology challenge that we have and why we really felt we had to replace the current platform that we developed. In UK and Italy today, some 100 million at absolute peak messages going through TradeElect for all of our equity, ETF, securitized derivative markets from Italy that we've moved onto the platform. Order to trade ratios, 25 to 1. 8 years ago, order to trade ratios, 3 to 1. So these are the high-frequency guys, these are the member firms that adopt these kind of patterns, really exploiting new ways of doing trading and growing. In the US, already peak days, around 10 billion. Order-to-trade ratios of 200 to 1, particularly in ETFs and other products, but even in equities, equity trading, 150 orders for every trade. So the scale and the difference between what we have today and what we need going forward is significant. And we have gone through a 3-month process testing Millennium's engine and a number of the others across the world to these kind of scale to make sure when we roll out, we're able to match what our clients need in terms of latencies, but also to match what we need in terms of scalability on a hardware footprint that really is going to be competitive in terms of its cost and its maintenance going forward. So perhaps turning to the second chart, on more the product end of my particular division. And I've been running information services now since 2001. And in that time, revenue has gone up about 2.5 times. And probably around 2002, mid-2002, we made a deliberate decision to diversify that business into a number of different core areas. Going back in 2001, the group was about 80 million. It had a bit of R&S, a little bit of Steedall and a few other things, but 95% plus of the revenue came from real-time data distribution, which is the left-hand block as you look at the chart at the bottom. At this stage, the division is about 2.5 times that in terms of revenue, with about 50% coming from real-time distribution of UK and Italian data, and the other 50% coming from the other themes across the chart as you go from left to right. As Xavier said earlier, a chart in my area, the potential for inorganic partnership and acquisition growth is truly, in my view, phenomenal. And this is at least a 50 billion sterling industry. Every time we look at it across the team, we think there's actually more, but there is room to grow given all the services and underpinnings that we now have in these areas going to left to right. And there is a ways to do that both inorganically and organically as we go forward. I put two bullets on the chart, so maybe I'll cover the first one, and then on the second one I'll take you through probably at most three or four areas that the team are currently working on and thinking about expanding on. And clearly I'm limited in what I can say, but to give you an idea of what those three or four areas are. Firstly, in terms of price formation, our role providing the central price is absolutely key. Back in 2001, we had about 40% market share of all UK equities trading. Today, in 2009, we still have about 40% of all equity market trading in the UK. The market share went up a little bit as more stuff came onto the book, and the market share has gone down a little bit as more trading is done off book and is done on some of the MTFs. But every deal that's done in the city today for UK equities is referenced to this price. So whether it's done upstairs in block trading, whether it's done through an indication of interest through a network like Altex, whether it's done on a fixed message on our platforms or on NiFix or on another, whether it's done on an MTF like Chi-X Bats or Turquoise, it is all done with reference to that transparent, fully open price. We provide, quite basically, the central market price formation, which is the benchmark and the reference to which everything is done. And the MTFs peg their prices to ours in the main. The off-stairs market is kind of referenced back. So it is a central price formation facility. And if anything, thinking across the industry, I would say our data is more valuable today in a fragmented world than it was in a slightly less fragmented world back in 2001. So that is our view on central price and the 50% of revenue that comes out of real-time data. And there are some areas for expansion there in terms of European and other things that we're thinking about. If I go into maybe more of the less well-known but other diversified units of the business, the other 50%, maybe thinking about two things that could come off CEDOL Univista. CEDOL is the number one standard in the world for naming instruments globally. And a piece of software we had called Univista, or software we had we've rebranded as Univista, has allowed us to think about going into, and we are going into, the cash reconciliation market. And also thinking about post-trade, trade processing confirmation. So I think about front office, middle office, back office. Univista is now a player in the middle office in terms of reducing the costs of reconciliation and trade processing and confirmation. And leveraging Extreme in post-trade, we think there's a really interesting opportunity to change the way middle to back office trade processing is done today. Going over maybe into the desktop and workflow products, Procode and Market Connect are the third and fourth vendors in the UK and Italy today. So Thomson Reuters, Bloomberg, GL, Fidessa and others also play in this space, but Procode and Market Connect have fully established themselves in that area. And there'll be two things on that chart, OMS and EMS, order management systems, execution management systems, embedding into the workflow of the customers is another theme that I hope you'll see coming out from our group over the next months and years. Also RSP and Fix. ProQuote is the number one retail service network in the UK with about 20 retail service providers connected and 40% of all retail trades. The price discovery mechanism, referenced again back to the price that comes out of Infolect, is on the RSP network. And finally, Fix plays against Altex, NiFix and others, and is an emerging business within that unit, which hopefully you'll hear more about going forward. And maybe fourthly and finally, I thought I'd talk a little bit about FTSE. FTSE is a great little business. It's growing double-digit for the last 6 years, over 20% compound annual growth rate. Is now last year reported revenues of about 70 million sterling, and is the third index provider in the world. So MSCI is number one as a benchmarking company. Standard & Poor's Indices is number two. FTSE is three. Dow Jones Indices is four. And then you go down into Russell, Stocks, Wilshire, and other players. But FTSE is up there as the third business. and with our diet now is also the second business in terms of global benchmarking. Standard & Poor's and Dow Jones are more product businesses, but MSCI and FTSE are more benchmarking businesses. FTSE is clearly number one in the UK and Italy, but is also number one in China. So 8 billion of the 12 billion of QFII funds that are invested into China are benchmarked to a FTSE product. And FTSE makes its money from that benchmarking and that branding of those ETFs together with the fund management customers. So a £70 million business growing really well in a very interesting space post the IPO of MSCI in 2007 about what we can do with that business. And if I think of MSCI, who also own Barra, there are other inorganic and organic opportunities around this particular area in this particular business. So again, expect to hear some more from us in terms of FTSE. And perhaps without going into too many of the other businesses on the chart, we can take some Q&A. First of all, I'll hand back to Xavier to conclude.
Thank you, David. We resume our normal program. This is going to be a brief conclusion. I'd just like to highlight two or three points because this is always core questions that we get, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot more. We think inherently this is business has been sold down short a little bit. It's a valuable business. We remain the price reference. In fact, I think as we've recently seen, and I won't quote any specific, the value and quality of our post-trade reporting in particular has been recently highlighted by certain events of reporting in other competing lower quality venues. We think we're in a great position. In fact, whilst there's going to be a bit of a time lag, for the time it's going to take us to continue to lower our costs, fix technology, and fix the particularity of paying three times the normal cost of clearing UK equities when one goes through Euroclear and LCH. Once we fix that, I have to tell you, we can't wait to compete because I think that the value of incumbency has not been priced in. And I think the value of potential volume growth, again, on par with other similar economic areas, where the pace of technology and the pace of efficiency in the back end of the post-trade is ahead of us, have shown the potential volume growth, which we haven't harnessed yet. And then there's all, and I think we've heard from both Rafi and Massimo, the tremendous potential. Now that the integration with Borsa Italiana is done, now that the management structure is streamlined, to grow in areas where, frankly, many of our competitors, and I'm not talking here about the sort of mono-platform MTF competitors, I'm talking about the established, in some cases, much larger exchange companies don't even play. Fixed income, retail, pan-European government bonds. We have an option there. We're ahead. So, of course, it's about execution and scaling it up on a pan-European scale. We've heard about our focus from Rafi on equity derivatives. I'd encourage you to, when you have a few minutes, take a look at the UK equity options market. Look at LIFFE. Look at the spot volatility spreads. Look at the touchpoint liquidity provided in the top five. Actually, pick anyone. Let's just say the top five UK blue chips. Compare that, the inside spread and the liquidity, with the liquidity and the spread you'll find on item for the sort of equivalent top five Italian blue chips. The liquidity item provides is 5 to 10 times bigger than the one provided in LIFFE, and the spreads, where in your LIFFE sometimes you have full volatility points, 2 to 3 volatility points in terms of spread, is 3 to 4 times the spreads, the average spreads that you will pick up on the IDEM platform. So we have a great, great instruments there. And here again, we can't wait to scale them up. So we are going to compete. We're going to compete in the UK. We're going to compete elsewhere in Europe. We're launching the corporate retail bond platform later in the fall, early winter in the UK. And if it works, and we believe it will, we'll then look at France. We'll then look at Germany. There's a tremendous potential for scaling up the Borsa Italiana portfolio. And that's already underway. So we've started to get going around cost, around technology. We've heard from David. The information services area is full of potential. £50 billion, actually, we think the market is bigger than that. But if you look at the confluence in Europe of information processing in the post-trade area and actual clearing and settlement, today, across border, it's a total mess. There isn't a single country that handles the confirmation of the trades, the pre-settlement, clearing, settlement, and custody in the same fashion. There is tremendous potential bringing together the infrastructure that has been built within Borsa Italiana, particularly as Massimo highlighted, XTRM, and connecting it not just to the other clearers and CSDs. That's already done. That's what XTRM does. But connecting it to the post-trade confirmation process. There are countries where in excess of 40% of the trades still in Europe get confirmed via faxes. If you marry the two, and we have the product portfolio in both areas. In fact, we're the only exchange with a product like XTRM. You could effectively create a private market solution replica to Target 2 Securities. So this is the sort of thinking at the moment that is driving us. Ways we can innovate to bring much more inefficiency. And one thing we're sure of is inefficiency does plays to fragmentation. Efficiency plays to incumbency. So whilst we've said we're pro-competition, and we are, and as I think we've tried to express, we think our advantages there have been a little bit underrated. We're also pro-transparency. And that plays very much to the ongoing regulatory review of markets. And here, I believe, and I will not go into details, hopefully they will become self-evident over the next weeks and months, here I believe we have a real competitive cards to play versus other exchanges. There's a big discussion as to how exchanges today are going to handle that regulatory evolution. Some are moving, and there's a big spread here. Some are moving, and there's a sort of CME Deutsche Börse approach, towards potential long-term disintermediation. And clearly, in the context of regulators worried about the opacity of markets, the opacity of pricing, credit default swaps comes to mind, for example, internal costing of transactions. There's a real concern and tremendous pressure. We've seen what Mr. Jouyet, the president of EMF, said in Bloomberg. We've seen the Charlie McCreevy, I think yesterday, the Charlie McCreevy statements about reviewing MiFIDs with a view to potentially curtailing internal costing of transactions. So there's a genuine desire in the regulatory world to review the way transactions are being done. And this is cash equities, and it's also going to be fixed income. And in derivatives, as Rafi highlighted, more than 80% of the transactions are OTC. So away from all these volume considerations or velocity consideration, there is a phenomenal potential via regulatory intervention for the level playing field to evolve and for exchanges to potentially capture a lot of that volume. But how are we as a London Stock Exchange Group going to position ourselves? Well, we're not going to position ourselves where the CMEs and the Deutsche Börses of the world are going, which is effectively disintermediation, transparency, direct access to buy side and many other constituencies. We believe there is a substantial opportunity to partner up with the intermediaries, with the large banks, the sell side organization, to partner up and offer. And this was the concept behind BICAL, which, goes back to 3 years already in terms of design. But to partner up and offer a framework, a structure under the corporate governance control and leadership and with the quality control standards of an exchange, but create new venues where transaction, particularly large transfers of risks, of block. This is what dark pools are. I mean, the word is a bit unfortunate. But what a dark pool is transfers of large blocks of risks without unsettling the underlying markets. And by proposing a solution, which is a partnership with the banks, we believe we'll be able to competitively position ourselves versus some of the other exchanges. And why we believe this is important, whilst there is, of course, and technology always disintermediates almost anything in the long run, the large intermediaries have three things: their research, their risk and market-making capabilities, and obviously this ability and ability to commit capital wanes with the state of the market. But even more importantly, they have distribution. So they feel, and that's the point they've made to regulators, that because of distribution, because of their risk and capital commitment capabilities and their understanding of the underlying asset class, they are a natural repository of a natural locus of crossing of transaction. And we want to partner up with them to harness, claw back some of that business. So we will be, over the coming weeks and months, pursuing some of these opportunities. I believe some of them will involve, as we've heard, organic leveraging of existing assets. Some will be inorganic, and obviously I will not talk about those. And the other element, which we haven't talked very much about, but which I would like to salute right now and highlight as a key competitive strength, is the quality of our staff. And particularly in the context of the regulatory review, we have staff, starting with this executive committee, who have genuine affection for the company, but are committed not only to growing shareholder value, but providing quality, transparency, stability, and resiliency in the financial infrastructure space. Our staff are committed to the quality of the trading services they provide, of the reporting services, and the quality of the data that they provide. That is very, very important. If you compete purely on the basis of price, purely on the basis of speed, in the long run, you will not remain a factor in the infrastructure business. Because clients, as well as regulators, care about the quality, stability, and resiliency of the services that we provide. Thank you very much for your attention. I'd like to now open it up. I'm conscious we're running a little bit late. I'd like to open it up to questions.